Do you have a favorite board game or card game?
My favorite board game is a crazy, huge, intense game called Twilight Imperium, fourth edition. I've played the pants off of Twilight Imperium, and it's really scary to get somebody to start playing, but I've had so many friends who started playing and they love it.
Put so many hours into it.
I put way too much time.
See, you can play it 4 to 8 players, and we've played a 6-player game that lasted 11 hours before.
And that's pretty standard. So,
That's
what about you?
I mean, I could literally talk about board games for hours on end. It's probably my number one hobby, so I'll try to keep it as short as possible. Two games kind of jump out as being my favorite. And they're very different, so I'm going to talk about them very, very briefly. I think one of them is a new game that I've gotten called Eclipse, which has replaced my wanting to play Twilight Imperium. It's similar theming, but like it's done it in such a shorter time.
It's a
And
lot less time commitment.
yes, and then the other one is a game I got you for your bachelor party, and that is Blood on the Clock Tower.
I don't know why I didn't think of that. I've played probably 100 games of Blood on the Clock Tower.
It's a social deduction game like Mafia.
But it's actually good. I don't like
I
Mafia at
hate
all.
Mafia. It's the
Oh,
worst.
Blood on the Clock Tower is so fun. Oh,
Oh, it's so
gosh.
much fun. I haven't played in a while. You play it every week, but I haven't come in a while. So, yes, those are probably our favorite games.
Welcome to IndieQ. And today we are jumping into the deck building game of Slay the Spire.
So, deck building, in my mind, is like hand in hand with board games. And so a deck builder, what you're doing is you start off with a basic set of cards. You'll draw typically about five of them at the start of your turn, play your cards, and shuffle them back into your deck. But throughout the game, you're getting new cards that you can add to your deck that are more powerful than your starting cards. And there are also ways that you can remove cards you don't like from your deck to make it more likely for you to draw your more powerful cards. And so you're using that to try to progress through whether it be a battle fighting enemies or whether you're trying to just get victory points in different ways, depending on the deck builder that you're playing as. Do you have much experience in deck builders prior to playing this game?
I think I've only played one game that was a deck builder, and I really, really enjoyed it. It's called Dominion. One of my friends in college had Dominion and like introduced it to me, and I was like, "This game is super fun," and I introduced it to you.
Yeah, I got hooked. It's probably what got me hooked into playing like designer board games. And I got lots of expansions for Dominion. It's what I played with my roommates in college like crazy. Every day we get home from class, and if at least two of us were there, we'd be like, "Hey, I'll play some Dominion," and we'd get out and play a couple
When's the last time
rounds.
you played Dominion?
It's probably been at least a year, and prior to that, like I probably have played it like 3 times in the last 5 years.
Okay, so it's waned in its popularity in your
Absolutely.
but one of the things that you didn't mention as you were explaining the deck builder, and I think it might be intuitive for some people, but if you've never played one, this would be helpful to know. When you draw your 5 cards, you play your cards, and they go into your discard pile. And so you go through your entire deck of cards that are from your draw pile, and once there are no more cards in your draw pile and you need to draw more cards because it's your turn again, that's when you shuffle together your discard pile. So you play through all your cards. It's not like you play 5 cards and then they go right back into your draw pile afterwards.
Correct.
And there's all kinds of things that can allow you to play more than 5 cards. Like certain cards will allow you to draw extra cards or get extra actions, things like that.
So the whole premise of the deck builder is finding fun combinations of the cards that are available to be able to progress and end up winning. So, it's very satisfying when you play a card that lets you draw more cards. You get the exact pairing of cards that you need to combo together to really be successful in the game. And so, Slay the Spire takes this deck building format, and you're basically using it to progress through this level to fight different enemies. Each enemy will be attacking you. You'll get a display above each enemy showing you what they're going to do on their turn. Whether that be an attack, or whether they're going to do a buff to themselves or do a debuff to you. And then you're able to use that information to use your attack cards to diminish their health to zero, but you're also using block cards to make it so you don't take permanent damage.
Yep.
And so you're progressing through these levels, and you get to a final boss battle. And once you beat that boss battle, you'll
gain all your health back.
Health back, and then you'll start through the next level. And there are three main levels that you're going to have to climb up.
One, two, and three.
All the way to the top and to defeat the boss to beat the game.
Yes. And so one of the things that Paul was sharing in this game, as you probably picked up, is it's like a dungeon crawler. You're walking through the dungeon trying to get to that final boss. And so there's health. You have your cards that are just the mainstay in any deck builder. But the way that you play your cards is through what is called in this game, energy. And just the base amount of energy that a normal character will have is 3 energy each turn. And so each of the cards costs a certain amount of energy for you to use. So obviously the cards that require more energy are probably more powerful cards, but it's going to take up more of your energy slots, so you aren't able to play a ton of them altogether. But there are lots of fun ways for you to kind of twist those things and be able to get more energy so that you could play a lot of your really powerful cards all in one turn.
And one thing I also think is really fun is there are certain cards that have a cost of X energy, and their power is done depending on how much energy you put into it. That's a really fun mechanic of, like, if you're able to gain a bunch of energy somehow to then get one of those cards that costs X, and you'd be able to, throw a bunch of energy. I think the highest I once got to, like, I think 16 or 18 energy on one turn before, yeah, which was just crazy. And I had one of those cards that was, like, super powerful.
I recently had a run where, I don't have to get onto all the details, but I was well over 20 energy, and I just didn't have enough cards to, like, use my energy. And I had it's called a relic that we haven't talked about yet, but relics are things that as you're climbing through the spire, if you defeat, like, elite bosses or you open up certain treasure chests, you get relics, and it will permanently, for the rest of the run, give you some kind of buff. And this buff allows you to keep the energy from the previous turn. So you don't lose all your energy at the end of the turn. And so I was, like, way up in the 20s, and I just didn't have anything to spend my energy on. But anyways.
Yes. So another aspect of the game is the fact that there are 4 different characters that you can play as, and each character has a completely different set of cards and some different relics that are available to interact with.
Yes.
Did you have a character that you were initially drawn to the most, and then did you have a character that was, like, by the end of your time playing, the one that you felt most akin to?
Definitely. I guess this weaves right into the way that I kind of played the game at the beginning. I was, like, after hearing your experience, I was, like, wildly successful when I started the game. The first run, I was like, what is this game? I don't really know. My second run, I beat the game, or I beat the third boss. So I won. And then I moved on to the second character, and I beat the game with the second character my first run. And then I moved on to the third character, and I beat the third character my first run. And so I started playing the fourth character. And so I was wildly successful at the beginning. And then the fourth character was, like, way harder for me for some reason at first. And I never played the second or third characters ever again. I've only played one run from each of them. And I played a ton of runs with the fourth character, whose name is the Watcher. And the Watcher is by far my favorite. I love playing the Watcher, the fourth character.
I had a not quite as successful experience. Most of my success came in the second character, who's like a thief assassin.
The Silent.
And I was able to win numerous runs with that character, and I just could not, for the life of me, win with the first or the third character. I would get to the final boss almost every run, and I just could not get my cards to come in the right order, and it just would not work out for me. I think that's one thing that can be very frustrating with deck builders, is that there's a degree of randomness when your cards are shuffled. You could have a really good setup, really good combos available, but if you don't actually draw them at the right time, they can never work together.
Mm-hmm.
Or there'd be times where the enemy is doing a really big attack and I only have attack cards. And I can never, I can't block at all. I'm just going to lose and there's nothing I can do about it. And so that was really frustrating. And then just this last week, I was able to win multiple times with the first character and with the third character. Unlike you, I found the fourth character to be crazy intuitive. And my very first time playing him, I was like trying to figure out what the character even did. I didn't understand the different stances that it had. And then the very second time I played it, I won the game all the way through. And so at the point of beating the game through the third act, I was kind of confused. It feels like there's more going on that I'm missing. And so I did a little bit of research online and found out that there is actually a secret fourth act that you can access. And I remember telling you about this, and you had absolutely no clue that it existed.
I didn't know that it existed, but I already had all the tools to be able to enter into the fourth act because I had beaten the first three characters already. And in order to open up the fourth act, you need to have one with the first three characters.
And then collect stuff on your run on the way to the final act. And so I have made it to the true final boss one time and got pretty close, but ended up beating me. And so I've yet to truly beat the game. I'm curious if you were successful where I failed.
So I guess what I said about the Watcher not clicking with me right away is kind of a little bit of an overstep. Because a part of that was the fact that I just played three games in a row and had won three times in a row. And it was just like, oh, yeah, this game's pretty easy. I could do this. But then it was like, I think I just had really good luck.
RNG.
And it just came in my favor. And then, so it was like the third time that I played with the Watcher. I finished the third act. But then I was like, I need to go for that final boss. It's like this heart, this beating heart that you... Like, when you get to it at the end of the third act, you, like, fall asleep, and you can't keep going. You start back over. But, I did the fourth act, and the first time I got to the fourth act, I didn't win. But I didn't even get to the final boss in the fourth act. And then I got to the fourth act one more time, and, I ended up winning the first time I actually interacted with the final boss. And part of that was just, like, the things that happened in my run. My character was so incredibly powerful. There's certain things that can happen that will give you a card that you can spend that every attack that turn will only give you one damage. So the final boss does a ton of damage to you, but I had these cards that allowed me to have the attacks not actually hurt me. Hurt me one damage. And even with that one damage... Like, and I had 70 damage to give. Like, it took me so long. And I was down to, like, 20 health.
Just so you know, the final boss normally can do, like, upwards of 60 or 70 damage in one hit.
Yes. And the final boss also has this weird thing where every time that you play a card, you take damage. Or maybe that's not every time.
I had that as well.
Okay. I just know that when it happened to me, it's like, I was... just hurting myself over and over again. I'm just like hitting him with attack after attack after attack after attack, and I just keep hurting myself. So I was using the blocks in order for the rebound off attacking him. But
yeah, I got there with the second character, Silent, and my whole thing was I would gain a lot of cards. I'd play a card to gain a bunch of cards that I could play for free, and I had a bunch of those in my deck, but they didn't do a ton of damage. And so my whole build just didn't work because every time I did one of my 16 small attacks, I take a damage.
It's like 16 damage.
And so it didn't end up working out. But that's part of the fun of the game is like learning what the different strategies are for dealing with the bosses.
Yeah.
Because each end of an act has a different boss that you could face. So there's more replayability in that regard of like, okay, I've beaten the acts all the way through, but I haven't beaten the acts against every final boss yet.
Yeah.
And so I think that's a really fun trying to figure out the different ways to deal with the different bosses that get progressively harder and more they're challenging to, because one strategy that can work for one boss might not work for another. And you're told right at the beginning which boss you're going to be facing at the end of the act based off of a picture at the top. And so you can try to plan your strategy around that. I think that's a really fun aspect of the game.
You kind of just explained a little bit of one of your strategies, which was playing cards that allow you to play a bunch of cards for free. Was that something that you kind of continued doing? Is that the way that you played normally, or did you go from different types of strategies as you were playing?
I feel like I have a strategy for each character that worked best for me. So the first character, my strategy was to get a bunch of strength and get cards that comboed together with strength and could do just crazy high damage amounts. The strategy that goes across the board is find any way to get more energy, because the more cards you can play, the better off you're going to be.
Yep.
So that was consistent. But then my second character, I was trying to get as many shivs as possible, which were you can play for free, and to get relics and whatnot to increase the damage of those shivs. So instead of normally they would deal 4 damage, I did end up getting to the point where each one was dealing close to 20 damage, and I had a multiple of a card that would let me draw 4 of them, and they're free to play.
Yeah.
So I could end up getting pretty high count, but you'd play a bunch of cards. The third character, which is, I think, one of the most unique and difficult to figure out characters, there's kind of like a programming element to it of like you're building up the sequence of stuff that your character does at the end of your turn. I utilize mostly the lightning in his character with those X cards. So I would try to build up as much energy. There's cards that let you gain more energy and cards that let you double the energy that you currently have, to then combo with channeling X number of lightning bolts to deal massive damage to everybody. Yeah. So that was the strategy that was I found successful.
I'll explain a little bit of the fourth character, because I've played a lot of the fourth character. The fourth character's mechanic is surrounding this idea of stances. So there's a couple of different stances that she can enter into. One of them is calm. And the cool thing about calm is when you exit calm, you get energy. And then wrath is the other main one. It allows you to do double damage, but you also take double damage. And there are different cards that will allow you to change your stances. And then there's one final one that doesn't really matter. But it allows you, it's like a special one. It's called divinity. And you get triple damage, and you don't have that negative modifier. But you only can do that for one turn until you rebuild it all the way back up. But I really loved being able to utilize, I'm going to use this card to make myself go into the calm stance, and then use this card to make myself go into the wrath stance so that I have extra energy to do stuff while I'm in wrath.
Do a bunch of damage, and then exit the stance, and then get so out you don't take the double damage.
Exactly.
Yes, I found that really enjoyable. One thing I found, even it might be slightly more enjoyable, but you have a little bit less control over, is there's also these daily challenges that you can do. You can just do a basic run, but there's also each day a challenge for a different character. And a lot of times that character have the cards from the fourth characters mixed in. You can get more of them and upgrade them and whatnot. So it's really fun using strategies from the first three characters that you've learned, but also then mixing in the stances.
Mm-hmm.
I found that probably to be the most enjoyable. The hard part is, you know, you could have a day that you're like, I really want to play the first character with some of these, the fourth character card colors are purple. I want some purple cards with the first character. But then in the next 3 days, doesn't actually have that option.
Yeah.
It's not as easily available. But I did notice that you can make custom runs. So I tinker with that just very minorly, but it allows just a crazy amount of customization, letting you draft your starting deck instead of just having the base set, making it so you get extra relics every turn, just a bunch of different stuff. Where basically you could turn on easy mode or even make it extra hard.
Yeah,
I think that's a really cool... It's not like super upfront that that's available, but it's a good way to know of like, hey, maybe I want a friend of mine or a spouse or a girlfriend to play the game with, experience the game. You can set it up in such a way that it will be more custom tailored to their skill level.
Yeah.
I think that's really nice because there's not like a clear difficulty, you know, easy, hard modes.
No, they're all
select. It's just
different characters.
Different characters and... What did you draw and what did you take?
Yeah.
And so I think the ability to kind of tweak the game in minor ways to make it easier or harder. But the tricky part is you actually have to know what the game is in order to make the tweaks that are correct.
Yeah.
Because there was one run where I don't remember exactly what I tweaked, but I just like made the game super hard. And I was like, I'm not good at this game already. And
it's not going to go well.
Died super fast.
Yeah. I didn't mention kind of my philosophy in playing deck builders in general. So playing Dominion, I was always about getting rid of cards. Getting rid of cards, even if it's like, it could be a pretty decent card in Dominion. It's like, I'm going to get rid of it though, because it's going to make the number of cards that I have to go through way smaller, and the ability for my cards to link up together so much higher. And so in this game, whenever I had the opportunity to get rid of a card, I would get rid of it. And I almost always got rid of the blocks. I would like get rid of all my blocks. And so I'm very vulnerable, but I was playing a very like
aggressive aggro style,
which is, yeah, this is how I play games. I'm aggressive. I don't want to sit back and be like, oh, I blocked for 10 damage this round, and the next round maybe I'll be able to attack. Sometimes you have to do that, otherwise you're going to lose. But the way that I want to play, I want to be able to draw my attacks and then
destroy them in one turn.
Destroy. And it's always super fun when you're just like fighting a boss or an elite, one of the elite enemies, and they never even get to do a move. One of my very favorite cards was called, I think it's called Leap. No, it's not Leap. It's the one that's like he's doing a pole vault. Vault. It's called Vault. But it allows you to, after your turn is over, to do another turn. And the enemy just stands there and doesn't do anything. And so the round that I beat the final Act 4 boss, I had like 3 upgraded leaps in my deck. And so I would go through, I would do a ton of damage, and then I would leap. And he would never even get a chance to attack me. And then I would do a bunch more damage and then leap. And I would just keep doing that.
That's awesome.
It was really fun.
Anyways. So one thing that's, I think it's kind of ironic, is you play this aggro style. I definitely feel like I'm more aggressive in this game than I've talked about in previous games that we've covered. But today I found out that you play and watch the whole animation for every single card. And I like almost immediately turn the animation off and would play the card and just instantly get the results. And I could beat, when I finished the whole run, it would take me about 40 to 50 minutes. And you took significantly longer because of watching the whole animation.
And I didn't even know that you could turn the animations off, but I never once was like, man, this is taking forever. Because I've played like Fire Emblem, and then if the attack, the animation like shows the cutscene and the Pegasus Rider flies in and slices, it's like, well, that was 10 seconds of my life that I'm never going to get back. In this game, it's pretty quick, but the fastest run that I ever had was like 1 hour and 12 minutes. So,
yeah, I just think it's funny. I think it's probably partially because the settings that we played the game. This game, I played a lot during my breaks at work or during my lunch break. And so I had a very specific amount of time and I wanted to get as far as I could in that time. So just kind of pushing myself to go. And because of that, that's how I played even when I had more time. Like if I was at home, staying up late, playing the game. But I would just try to get as much in as possible. But you said that you played this game a lot before bed.
Yeah, and I never felt like I had a time constraint. So I was just like enjoying the game, thinking of like the strategy that I want to impart this turn based on the card that I had. I wasn't like, oh, snap decisions, doing these really quickly.
No, but I think it's funny. So you're like super aggro, but calm. And I wouldn't always play aggro, but I'm just like going as quick as I can, trying to just tap, skip, go. You know, and every once in a while, because I was going so fast, I would have had like a relic that would let you like every 10 cards that you play, you get an extra energy. And I would have skipped my turn and still have an energy. I could have played it. Oh, I could have played a card. Why did I push the skip button? But yeah. Like I was just real fast, going.
I had one really dumb instance where I was doing really, really well. And what you can do, I don't know if you ever did this, when you're picking a card that you're going to add to your deck, which we didn't explain when that happens, but every time that you beat an enemy, you could add a card to your deck. It gives you 3 options, and you can pick one or you can skip it. And I would suggest skipping it most of the time, unless there's a really good card in there. But anyways, if you push the on the Switch, I think it's the Y button, you can like see what that card will be if it's upgraded. And so I was doing that a lot. I would push Y. But there was this one time, it was like a really hard enemy that I was about to win. But I pushed Y because I wanted to look
at the upgraded version. Skip button.
And it's also the skip button. And so I pushed Y and I skipped. And I was just like, well, I just got hit for 50 damage instead of winning. And I just like rage quit. But
see, I didn't have any rage quits. I'd have occasionally like where I just was not drawing the right cards early in a run. And I'm like, I could push the on and make it semi-far, but no, I had no chance with the final boss. And I would just quit and start the run over again. Because there's no point in, you know, in my time constraints, there's no point in me spending another 20 minutes on a run I know I'm not going to win.
Mm-hmm.
So, do you have anything else that you feel like we need to go into? Or do you think it's time that we start pitting it against the other games in the queue?
I'm ready to start ranking. Now that we're getting a bigger group of... We have 10 right now. This is kind of exciting. We're double digits. I think what we should do is pick a spot that we think would be a good starting point to go up against. And so then we'll see how far it climbs or how far it falls from that point. Do you have a dart spot that you want to aim for right now?
I'm thinking that we should start somewhere close to Into the Breach, going up towards the top of the queue.
Okay. I think that's great, because I feel like the way that I played Into the Breach and Blade of the Spire were very similar. So let's start there. Start at Into the Breach. So the comparison between Slay the Spire and Into the Breach, a lot of times we've been talking about how Into the Breach is more bite-sized. The way that I played Slay the Spire felt very similar. It wasn't like this massive game. It's very simple concepts that you are also trying to walk through this puzzle. The puzzle for Into the Breach was more like grid-based tactics, where Slay the Spire is... with the cards.
So probability, understanding, and combo building.
Exactly. So, but I played them like in the same setting where I was laying in bed, just like waiting to get tired, which sometimes when you're playing these games, you get tired a lot less tired because you're so excited about what's going on. But do you see any similarities or?
I think the story is very comparable in the fact that technically there is something going on there, but it is not focal point. It's more of the means to actually go about the gameplay, and the gameplay is front and center. Is if you don't enjoy the gameplay, it's not like the story is going to pull you along. It's literally the draw of the game is figuring out how the cards work together and just enjoying that puzzle aspect of the game.
Yeah. So just looking at them from two different types of puzzles, which puzzle did you enjoy better?
I definitely would say that I enjoyed Slay the Spire's puzzle more. I think it had more moments of frustration because you feel like I did everything right and I just didn't draw the right cards and I lost, even though I had a great deck.
Yeah.
And whereas Into the Breach is more like I made a stupid decision and that's why I lost. So depending on whether or not you want to be able to blame yourself or blame somebody else for you losing... I think that can differ. I think I would rather be able to blame the game instead of being super mad. Like, I made such a stupid decision.
That's fair, yeah. I don't know if I ever felt like the game, like, screwed me over in Slay the Spire, though. You're saying, like, oh, I never got the right cards. And there could have been a time where it's like, if I got the right cards, I would have been fine.
I think some of that was my earlier runs where I would just take a card every single time. And so you just have a huge deck, and it doesn't necessarily work together well. Where you just get frustrated, like, I need to draw a block card, and I put too many attacks. Like, so some of that's technically your fault, but there was a couple times where I felt like I had really solid, and just, like, would need, if I just drew one card, I'm going to win. And for three rounds in a row, I just take massive damage, because I could not draw the one card I need.
Yep.
That's kind of just how deck builders are.
Yeah, then, which is why I'm all about culling the deck, taking all the cards that I don't need.
But even if you have a small deck, you could run in a situation of like, okay, I have 20 cards in my deck. I need one of them. And it could be three turns away.
It could be. That's very true. I think that it's pretty safe to say that Slay the Spire should be above Into the Breach.
Yes.
Let's move it up and go against Crypt of the Necrodancer now.
So they're both technically kind of dungeon crawly.
Yes.
So I think comparison is just kind of the enemy types that you're facing. I feel like I really enjoyed the enemy types that Slay the Spire had. They felt unique to the game, but not crazy enough that you couldn't understand what they were. So just based off the enemy type, you kind of got a sense of what they could do, especially as far as like the debuffs go.
Yeah.
Or like cards that they're going to add into your hand that are bad cards that you don't want. but I was excited to see, especially the bosses. I feel like were very unique concepts of things that you're fighting, and they just felt very much different. Some of the enemies would build up big shields, and so they, if you could break through their shield, you could kill them really quickly, but they would just keep adding more to their shields, and so it's kind of that fun balance. I mentioned before, I was not a huge fan of the enemy types in Crypt of the NecroDancer.
Yeah, I actually really enjoyed both these games in very different capacities. I feel like Crypt of the NecroDancer was like that just enjoyment of like improving my abilities in the game, whereas Slay the Spire is much more of a knowledge-based improvement. And so it's like once you understand how the cards work together or which cards are worth getting or
saying relic combos.
Yeah.
Or trying to get specific relics.
And I would say that, like, Slay the Spire, like, I have beat the Act 4 boss, the final boss, and I still want to play. Whereas when I was playing Crypt of the NecroDancer, like, I felt like I finished the final boss that I was going to get to. And I was really, I'm done playing. But right now, I'm like, I want to play Slay the Spire right now. I was literally playing right before you got here because I'm like, oh, I just really enjoy playing this game.
I feel like you hit it on the nail on the head of, like, there's a skill ceiling versus a knowledge ceiling in the two games. And the skill ceiling, once you kind of max that out or understand, like, this is the max I'm capable of, the interest really kind of goes away. Because a lot of the draw is the mastering of the skill and the growth of the skill. And so once you've felt like you can't grow anymore, you don't have anything to do. Whereas the knowledge aspect, I just feel like, at least for our personality types, is a lot more enticing of, like, I want to understand this better. I want to be able to make the combos work perfectly and see that success. So I'm very cool with moving it above Crypt of the NecroDancer.
All right. I am too. Well, you also didn't really like Crypt of the NecroDancer, so you're definitely fine. But I'm okay with it too. Let's go on. Slay the Spire versus Dead Cells. Again, very different types of games where Dead Cells is such an action-based game, and Slay the Spire is a decision. Like, it even has, we didn't mention this, but there are times when it's like, the encounter that you have is like, do you choose to grab the amulet from the table?
And be cursed or leave it.
Yeah, so like, that could be your encounter, is like, dealing with a decision. And where, like, you could do that in Dead Cells a little bit, where you're like, you run down here, you're like, oh, that boss, or not this boss, but that, like, enemy, I don't really want to fight him right now. I'm going to go backwards and backtrack and try to go around a different way. You could do that in Dead Cells, but I would say Dead Cells is much more that beat him up, run in, or I guess you could do the distance stuff, but you're pretty much going to fight everything that's in front of you, whereas Slay the Spire is, like, making my decisions. I'm going to go this way because I know that I can't fight the elite boss, so I'm not going to take that route. I'm going to go away from the elite boss.
Yeah. This one, I think, just comes down to preference styles. I that knowledge aspect of the game is so enticing to me. That the desire to do more runs in that. It's hard. Dead Cells is such a good game. And there's so much going on in it. I feel like it has more to do than Slay the Spire does. Because I'm curious if there will come a point where we feel that knowledge mastery has been accomplished, and the draw will just drop significantly until we, you know, put the game off for a significant period of time and kind of come back at it. So,
the hard part for me is probably the idea of recency bias. Like, right, I'm playing Slay the Spire right now. I'm in the middle of a run right now, and I paused the run so we could record this episode, and I'm, like, really excited about continuing to play. Whereas I haven't played Dead Cell in I don't know, a couple months now. And so Slay the Spire is, like, so much, like, fresher in my mind. But, yeah, Dead Cell, I do love Dead Cells. So and that's, like, the balance. I'm like, if we look out a month from now when I haven't played Slay the Spire in a couple months, am I still going to be as high on Slay the Spire?
That's kind of the downfall of the way that we're doing this ranking system, is we rank the one that is the freshest in our head. Because I can see it ending up right here and not moving past Dead Cells. But I could also see it jumping ahead of Salt and Sanctuary. And yeah. I don't really have a good reason to put it in any one of those spots. I feel like this is its range of where it should be on the queue is somewhere in, you know, below Dead Cells, maybe above Dead Cells or above Salt and Sanctuary.
It's funny because usually one of us have a stronger opinion on where it should go. I think I 100% agree, though. It should either be right below Dead Cells or right above Salt and Sanctuary. I don't think right above Salt and Sanctuary is Stardew Valley, which we talked about last week. And I'm sure you'd be fine with it going above Stardew, but I want Stardew.
I actually don't think. I had more enjoyment in this game, but as far as if you haven't played any of these games, which ones I think you should give it a shot first, I think Stardew would be the one I would say, hey, try that one first.
When you say it like that, I feel like it has to go below Dead Cells. I really enjoy Slay the Spire, but if I'm talking to one of my friends and I have the opportunity to introduce them to one game, Slay the Spire or Dead Cells, I'm going to give them Dead Cells.
I think the one caveat to that would be if that was like one of my friends who I know is super into board games.
Okay, because
board gaming is so fun, but it's so dependent on being able to get together with people. And a lot of times, you know, if you're lucky, you can play once a week. A lot of people play board games once a month or once every other month just because it's hard to get a group of people who know how to play the game. And so if that is your itch, this is going to scratch that specific itch because the mechanic of the game is a board game mechanic made into video game form just to make it way easier.
That's a good point.
So if you are like die hard into the designer board game scene, I would say Slay the Spire first. But we are a video game podcast, not a board game podcast.
As much as we might like to be a board game podcast.
I think that right below Dead Cells is a very adequate spot for Slay the Spire.
I just feel like that just feels like the right spot for it. So that means that Slay the Spire is our new number 7 on the queue. Something we didn't mention about Slay the Spire also is that this was Paul's birthday gift from David and I for our indie birthday game, our exchange. We got it like less than a month ago.
So I'd say a birthday gift, getting on to top 7, that's a pretty good birthday gift. So we'll see if it continues to hold its spot or if some of these games that we're going to play in the future are going to
jump over top of it.
Yes.